In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Betches Media presents.
Madam Speaker. Madam Vice President.
You want to hang out with us? And get your vaccine. Vaccine.
And so I went to Human Resources.
There's some things I just can't tell you on air.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
A woman's problem, if you will.
Hello, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Tammy Sage.
I'm Caitlin Bird.
And this is the Betches Sup Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. Ugh. We were really going to laugh about this first headline, but since we discussing it and our podcast recording time, it has sadly been debunked. But a headline went around this morning saying that former Trump aide Hope Hicks might have been joining Celebrity Big Brother. And we all found this very believable. I did.
Oh, totally. Honestly, thankfully, it was debunked before we recorded. Could you imagine if we recorded like 15 minutes on Hope Hicks?
Well, nobody, I would never have put it in here unless two other sources like confirmed it, but there was literally like one tweet. So I was like, oh, I'll just wait for it to be confirmed. But then I saw Maggie Haberman's tweet saying that that it wasn't happening. I'm going to be optimistic here and assume that like there was
Maggie
a game.
Maggie Haberman knew.
Of course she did. Yeah, exactly. Because Hope Hicks texted her.
That's the real story.
That's so true. Famously easy on the Trump family. Maggie Haberman suddenly has the scoop that Trump aide Hope Hicks is not joining. Do you think that she has her personal number?
Of course. Yeah. That's how she probably got so many scoops. It's like, you know, very rich people gonna run in the same circles.
And her mom does PR for the Trumps. That's why.
Yes.
That's right. That's right. For Rubenstein, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Sounds all incredibly ethical, right?
I know. But I'm going to be optimistic here and assume that this was like a game of tabloid telephone and maybe just the wrong political figure was referenced in the story. So who in politics right now do you think we should banish to the Big Brother house? I think Madison Cawthorn would be perfect for a number of reasons. I think he does not need to be in Congress. And I think he would be like a good, like, I don't know, I can see him on as a Summer House character. He's got the look.
Matt Gaetz.
That's what I was going to say.
I'm so sorry.
No, but here's the thing. I was going to say I agree with both of those, obviously, but don't you feel that that is potentially a hazard to the other members?
Yeah, that's true.
It's
unethical.
I don't think it would really, really ethical to place those two individuals in a house with other women.
Well, here's the thing. You do have to be over 18 to be on Celebrity Big Brother. So,
you know what? But you don't have to be under 18 to be assaulted. So, you know, is there anyone who like sucks a lot, but not in that particular way?
Neil Gorsuch, who won't wear a mask on the Supreme Court bench, forcing Sonia Sotomayor to work from home, even though he should work from home. I think the person who wants to spread the death virus should work from home.
Just, right.
So also she's got type 1 diabetes, so she's actually in danger from catching COVID.
Yeah. So it sounds like for the safety of the rest of our Supreme Court justices, we should probably contain Neil Gorsuch in the big Celebrity
Big
Brother
house and teleconference in the Supreme
right.
Court.
He gets his own office in the Big Brother house. And in the background, you can hear NeNe Leakes and Tyler Cameron going at it.
He does have a sort of like, I don't know what look he has, but he has a look about him that, I don't know, I find it a bit menacing, I gotta say. And if he would just cover his face, we wouldn't have to see it. But I think Neil Gorsuch is a very, that's not a choice I would have thought. That's not a path I would have thought we went down when I started this. But that's why I love our podcast hosts, because we always end up somewhere I don't expect.
He's a terrible person, but in a not a salty way. So there we go.
There's many ways to be a terrible person.
We've got the whole rainbow inside the Republican Party right now.
I know. The fact that Hope Hicks was believable was probably because she was just a woman and she doesn't have any. I mean, the worst. I mean, she did give Donald Trump COVID, right? Like, that's probably what happened.
I think that is a very
likely.
One of the very likely scenarios. maybe someone like Amy Coney Barrett. She might be interesting. She's not going to hurt anybody, you know.
Yeah, Lauren she would like misunderstand. All these people would like
Boebert. That's true.
All these people would misunderstand like the prompt and just assume it was like, "Oh, Big Brother," so we can tell people what to do with their lives. No, no, no. You just sit around in a room and
that's what she does for her day job. So yes.
Well, you have Mark. You could have Mark Zuckerberg, and he'd be like, "This is just like work."
True. I mean, a lot of these people should probably be confined to a single room, just not in the Big Brother house, in a prison cell. And ooh, for our next story, we're going to discuss those potential outcomes. The House Select Committee on January 6th, they've subpoenaed and obtained the phone records. Obtained. I feel like I've never said subpoenaed and obtained. I haven't said that for a while about this investigation. I think because these, you know, they have to go to the phone company. But the phone records associated with former President Trump's son, Eric Trump, and Kimberly Guilfoyle, who was a former Trump advisor and, of course, is the fiance to Donald Trump Jr. and famously ex-wife to California Governor Gavin Newsom. Both of them spoke at the Stop the Steal rally on January 6th, and the records that they have include, you know, incoming calls, outgoing calls, the dates that they were made, the duration, the times of their calls, all that stuff. Believe it or not, this is the first subpoena for a Trump family member for this, for the House committee investigation to January 6th. Of course, for Letitia James's tax case in New York, she's gotten to speak to these clowns. Eric Trump has already testified and apparently pled the Fifth more than 500 times in his deposition with her, which just seems impressive.
Now we know how many questions there were, like 505. So my first reaction was like, okay, all these people definitely make sense as subpoena worthy, but why, what about the people who are not subpoenaed? Are they,
for the House?
Howard Don Jr. and Ivanka and... even like,
I think they probably eventually will be, but these people didn't get subpoenaed. Their record, their like phone records.
That's what I meant. So why wouldn't you just be like, we're also going to do John Jr. and Ivanka and Mike Pence? Because Mike Pence's are probably quite fruitful, is my guess.
I don't know if his cell phone records would be, because I think he was communicating via the Secret Service at that point. So the communications weren't directly from him. They were happening between the officers around him.
But I mean, like, to him.
That's true. I mean, if there were at the time, however, I think Donald Trump was speaking to Mike Pence via the crowd, which was hang him.
Right. So- but what about like the week earlier? You know, like what about like the, you know, there's 2 months earlier that this could have been interesting for. I think more interesting than what people sent is what was sent to them, because you can't. You know, you can kind of control what you sent. You're probably like trying to cover your ass, I imagine, when you're planning the insurrection, or I don't know. These people don't even try to do that in some cases.
Yeah, it sort of reminds me of like in the first impeachment or some, I don't even know if it was involved in impeachment, but somebody sent something claiming to have damning evidence about Hillary Clinton. And John Jr. was like, great, we love it. And that was, that's
just
an example
before the
of like,
summer.
Right. What was incoming was just as important. Yeah. Like if people were offering Eric Trump, you know, money to keep pursuing this, they specifically want to look if they're doing any fundraising. See, I think like they have to have very specific reasons for each subpoena, and maybe they just are doing one at a time. Like, you know, the reason, their rationale for why they want Giuliani and Jenna Ellis is different for why they want the others. Like they have to like very specifically outline what they hope to find. So maybe that's why they're going here first. But it's starting to look like this could be a very productive year for this committee.
Well, insurrections are like onions. You know?
Insurrections are like onions. Yeah, they make me cry.
You got to peel, yes, and you have to peel the outer layers till you get to the center core, which is Donald Trump,
famously
obviously.
Famously delicious, the center core of the onion.
Yeah, the most, like, what's that word? Part
sharp?
I don't know, sharp, the sharpest part of the onion. You have Donald Trump.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, Good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So what they're looking for, the next layers they're looking for Eric, they're specifically looking at if he did any fundraising for the rally. The committee is also looking to subpoena former President Trump's personal lawyer, Ruggiani, along with Jenna Ellis and Sidney Powell. Sidney Powell is like the extra spicy version of Trump crazy. Like, I think the Trump campaign even was like, we don't need you around anymore, even before stuff went down. She was urging Trump to seize voting machines and find evidence that they were tampered with by foreign adversaries. She's continued to file election lawsuits just sort of like on her own. But a Michigan judge recently ordered her to attend classes on the ethical and legal requirements for filing a lawsuit. Isn't that law school? Why are we giving lawyers like free continuing? Maybe it's not free. No, but
they have to pay for continuing education. And yes, they do have to continue doing it. I just think that there, we have gotten to a point where like disbarment should be used more frequently. Like, you know, if you're an officer of the court, which is what the point of becoming a lawyer is, you are ethically bound in lots of different ways to actually be responsible with the powers entrusted to you. And they take that pretty seriously. Like, if you smoked weed, they'd be like, wow, yeah, before it was legal. They would be like, oh my God, I can't believe, blah, blah, blah. You'd end up in huge bunches of trouble for it. But weirdly, you can help plan an insurrection against the government of the United States, and they'll just be like, I know. Go take some 5 hours ethics classes.
Right.
That is so true. I can't believe it. Yeah, I know we probably have, like, lawyers that listen. And I know when Mike was, like, trying to get admitted to the bar, he was so I mean, the kid's never done anything wrong, but he was just so anxious about any little thing from high school that could like come up. And it is kind of insane to think that these clowns are like running around committing sedition and they get a slap on the wrist and you have to go take some ethics classes.
How is Rudy Giuliani still allowed to practice law? That's my deep-abiding question.
That was temporary. I thought so too.
For good reason.
But I didn't know that.
For perjury.
Yeah, he got disbarred under the whole perjury thing. Because it's a felony.
Yeah.
It's a crime. Now, admittedly, is it enough to knock you out of office? No, because that's not how politics works. But, I mean, and also the people who are going to take over were going to be like Republicans. So we were like,
Right.
But the point is that, like, this should come with some serious consequences. Because, you know, my man was not just out here, you know, dripping just for men, but he was out there dripping a whole seditious conspiracy over an election.
It's true. I mean, this is sort of where you get the intersection of like privilege, consequences, mental health, even, because think about this woman like Sidney Powell and some of these people. Who's the other guy who was with her? I mean, people were saying that Sidney Powell and what was the one who Kyle Rittenhouse said was, Lynn Wood.
I can't remember.
Yeah, he said he was like a psycho. And there were like some accounts written about these people that were like not only indicative of, you know, rational planning of a coup, but just some really erratic, potentially diagnosable behavior. And they just sort of get to impose, I mean, even look at Donald Trump, just himself. Mm-hmm. These people get to impose their very dangerous, abusive mental illnesses and the consequences of them with basically no consequences to themselves. Like, these people aren't going to just show up to the subpoena. There's going to be a long time of litigation if the committee is even able to outlast that litigation. And it's because they're like, fucking white people dressed up as, you know, lawyers, but they're just kind of
I can't believe that we're not saying every day that Bill Clinton was disbarred over his impeachment and we still have these people running around with licenses to practice law. That's out of control. Like, it's like you're saying, Sammy, it's like these people act like, and even we sort of frame them like the idea of consequences and accountability is just sort of like a
would be such a big deal. Like, oh my goodness, all of these educated whites going to prison. It's like they committed violent crimes. Like, this is what they did. And that's the punishment. Just because we haven't really seen it in this way before, we haven't been willing to see it in this way before.
But we have. There have been so many corruption scandals throughout American history, throwing out some old archaic ones. I mean, there's Watergate, where also Spiro Agnew, the reason why Gerald Ford took over for Richard Nixon is because his actual VP had already been arrested. Spiro Agnew got arrested in between for a completely different corruption scandal. It's incredible, by the way. It was so bad. They were like, we'll just, and then he picked Gerald Ford as his VP.
And they get barely any consequences.
And then he got a pardon.
Yeah. Barely any consequences. Like they get an ethics class, like you said. Like a class. You get a fucking class on ethics. Like, I could make an ethical argument for a lot of... There's an ethical argument for eugenics that exists. Like, that very famous guy, what's his name? Singer? That's his ethics, you know? You can really... It's just sort of ridiculous. And... The head of the Oath Keepers, I was like reading about this guy when he got arrested. He went to Yale. Like,
right.
Ron
DeSantis went to Harvard and Yale.
It's not a matter of like education, but when it comes to what they will do, but it is when they will, when they will get punished for what they'll do.
I'm just here still grabbing my, I mean, I understand how George W. Bush went to Yale.
Yes, we all understand Harvard. That.
Right. That makes perfect sense. But Ron DeSantis? Really? They just letting any old person in now. What the, what? Anyway, that's, then again, Ben Sasse has a PhD from Yale in American history and said that you can't be mean to people who help do your chores.
See, this is why Ben like, Sasse.
Sir,
this is why
was
Ben Sasse.
Slavery in this country.
Yeah, and Ron DeSantis.
You are an American history PhD.
Being aware of like facts, like that earn you the degree, is really irrelevant when you don't have like the worldview to place it in, whether that comes from experience or not. You know, it's just
They just jam it into whatever worldview they find politically favorable in the moment because they're not dumb. So,
yeah.
So tomorrow is January 20th, which means it is 1 year since President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris were inaugurated. This is 1 year, definitely really snuck up. Our nervous systems have had a year to regulate since Trump, albeit a year filled with new variants. There were multiple police shootings and high-profile trials, voter suppression everywhere. So we didn't really get a full year, a full recovery. But obviously, we're a daily podcast. It's our job to get into the like quotidian of it all and to nitpick day to day. Thanks. I was nervous to say that.
Yeah. Were you nervous? You wrote it for yourself.
That's true. But I still don't say that word out loud very often.
Le Pen, quotidien.
Yes, that's the only time. So today we wanted to zoom out a bit. Oh, I also capitalized Zoom in this outline. That's sad. Today we wanted to zoom out a bit as we look back on a year of the Biden administration and about 9 months until the midterms at how this Democratic government has been doing. I wanted to make this a little bit different than some of our like year-end conversations. So I think we're just going to like really focus on the Biden administration, but also like I consider its partners in Congress, like the Nancy Pelosi's and the Chuck Schumer's, like a vital kind of part of that. So kind of like the greater cinematic universe of the Biden administration is acceptable for what we're going to do, which is sort of a superlatives approach. I want to know what you guys think of how it's been going. To start, who or what has impressed you most about the Biden administration or its partners in Congress this year? Caitlin, I'm really curious what you have to say for this one.
Totally.
I'm going to say judicial nominations. They have not expanded the judiciary, but they've certainly been diverse, interesting, and most of all, the diversity is not just, you know, a kind of token diversity of like, oh, here are some of the same kinds of people that are already on the bench, but now they're brown. It has been like picking people who have public defense experience, picking people who have different perspectives in the law that can inform how the law actually functions on a day-to-day basis and not, you know, people who have just generally gone the track. Mm-hmm. They go through theory, they go into clerkships, they, you know, they do the right things. Instead, we've got some people who have a little bit more, you know, spicy living experience. It's nice. Way to go, Biden administration.
Yeah, definitely.
Again, back I saw to the experience, not just the diplomas.
Yeah, it is really cool because you've sort of seen people that were became kind of like legal rock stars during the Trump administration get tapped for judicial seats. Like, I think that Dale Ho is going to be nominated, and he ran the voting rights project at the ACLU. I don't think Sherrilyn Ifill has been tapped yet, but I will. She needs to be. Actually, she should be on the Supreme Court.
I saw a rumor. It's a rumor. So this is a rumor. I saw
it's okay,
a rumor.
We got it. We got it. Rumor.
There was maybe going to be a retirement. And they suggested the top potential three names. And I want to say one was Sherrilyn Ifill.
It had to have been.
The other was, I want to say something Brown Jackson. And then I honestly, the long shot in the prediction was Kamala Harris. And again, this was a tweet I saw on Twitter. It was from like a relatively reliable person, but I wouldn't necessarily go spreading it, but it was just one perspective.
No, that's interesting. I think that's very, I don't think that's fake newsy. I think that's a... I certainly hope that is a conversation that we're having.
Well, I did call it potentially a
rumor. I mean, there's got to be a retirement eventually, right? Like, there will be a retirement eventually or a death.
There's either one, there's either 50-50 chance. You're either doing one or the other.
Right.
You're retiring or you're
going to kick it. Yeah.
Either you leave or it leaves you. not to be morbid, but yeah.
Who have you been most impressed with, Sammy, so far, or what?
I am impressed with, I know we don't live in a world where intent conquers impact, but I have been most impressed with the administration's intent. And I do really get a sense that if they could just do what they wanted to do, I would be in full support of their agenda to a large extent. But I am least impressed by their ability to actually get anything done. And I would say, I don't want to say disappointed by, because I wouldn't expect him to do this, but I am so infuriated over the just silence and total lack of action by Chuck Schumer. Like, it's as if the man doesn't exist. Nancy Pelosi is way more vocal about the Senate than he is. He will be like, oh, we're going to try like something like once every 6 months and nothing ever happens. And I don't know like what the fuck he's doing.
I would say that it kind of flips to who I would put as MVP. I always put Nancy Smash as MVP. She is one of the greatest legislators in American history. This is bar none. I think that she should have a building like Rayburn has a building named after. She's accomplished more. There's really no question that honestly, she's one of the best House speakers in American history, but also one of the most successful legislative leaders in American history as well at any level. Unbelievable level of accomplishment. Keeping the caucus together is in this environment. In this mm-hmm. environment, she keeps the caucus together. She never puts anything. She's never lost a floor vote. She still hasn't lost a floor vote. Even now, she's just a complete beast.
And she has the full respect of everybody.
We gonna miss her when she's gone. Like, yes. Don't get me wrong. I think we need to stop at this gerontocracy where, like, everybody's old forever. And, like, we're just like, okay, I guess 80-year-olds run our country. Like, no, this is terrible. Except for Nancy.
She's a rare person.
Until literally the end. Because she's the only one who's so good at her job. I can't see who's going to replace her, who's going to do as well as she does.
Yeah, it's almost like she knows. Yeah, she has to earn her place every day. It's like she's 80 and she's still walking around there in 5-inch heels every day. You know, doing what needs to be done. You know, I tend to be a little bit easier on Chuck Schumer, but when compared with Nancy Pelosi and just how effective she is and how every day she's thinking of a strategic way to help her, she also thinks about her people in terms of politics, her people being the members of Congress in a way that I wish maybe Chuck Schumer did a little bit more. I mean, I don't know what Chuck Schumer can do for Senate members' electability, but he doesn't appear to be doing anything. And the next year, they're going to need to communicate really clearly what has gotten in their way, Because, like, say, obviously to Sammy, who was, you know, very sympathetic to Democratic leadership, it looks like nothing is happening. I mean,
he hasn't done one thing. Nancy is the only one pulling her weight on the group project, frankly.
So do you want him to do more things? Like, later today, Chuck is going to do the thing where he's going to, you know, put up, okay, can we pass voting rights? And Republicans are going to filibuster. And then he's going to say, okay, Democrats, let's end the filibuster so he can get. Do you mean you wanted him to not give up every time Joe Manchin was like, we're not going to do it? Like, did you want more, you know, floor votes? Tell us how it's going to be. Or did you want him to literally be more effective at changing, you know, some minds in the Senate?
I mean, I don't really know the exact mechanics of what goes on day to day, but we only see the outside. Nancy Pelosi, we're not watching Nancy Pelosi being effective every day. We just know that there are results. And the fact is, like, another, like, Barack Obama thing, like, get caught trying, like, never been caught trying.
Never, never. That's very true.
Never seen doing anything, neither good nor bad. You know, like, Nancy Pelosi has made missteps, but you know she's doing something. It's like the results are there, and you don't know exactly how those results happened. Those are probably private conversations. I'm sure it's also the work of a very effective, well-managed staff. It's not just her. She can't manage the entire Democratic caucus alone. So what the fuck is he doing? Truly, what the fuck is he doing?
And her members of Congress, like, they and we know this also just from, you know, booking them, like, they do not want to say anything that Nancy is not publicly communicating. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And even when, you know, there are fissures with the Progressive Caucus, like, it's still very respectful. And you just know that Joe Manchin does not give a shit what Chuck Schumer thinks. Where, like, and that's the power he lacks. Whereas Nancy Pelosi, like, her people, they really care what she thinks of them.
If someone doesn't give a shit what you think, then you incentivize them. You're like, he's not, like, born yesterday. This isn't his first day in the Senate. Like, there are ways there are political levers that I imagine are available to pull, I don't know what they are. Look, like, I admit that maybe I'm not the person to, I don't have an answer that, like, is solvable, but the fact that he hasn't ever even appeared to try to think of one.
Yeah.
So I don't see, like, I'm sorry. Next. Who's going to try next?
Yeah. Get caught trying. And I think, what you said makes a lot of sense about how, like, we don't know exactly, you know, this year has not been really a year versus the Trump administration where you're seeing a lot of clips of, like, Nancy Pelosi claps back and does this. It's like, she's just doing it behind the scenes, and her caucus is passing bill after bill after bill. Good bills that are getting caught up in the Senate. That was really those are both really interesting, contrasting answers. So, Sammy, did you give an MVP?
I only have complaints.
Yeah. Well, I feel like the Biden administration is like a person who has spent a lot of time in therapy.
Yes.
But, like, they're not super reactive. When they have an issue, they will sort of kind of, like, sit back and see how it goes. Like, they'll sort of observe and see if it becomes something super serious that people aren't going to, like, let go, or if it's going to become something that people are, like, constantly going to harp on. I'm thinking, like, with pandemic stuff, people have never left them alone about not having tests and not having good masks. And they have, like, realized that people aren't going to leave them alone about that. And they have reacted and they have, like, fixed it. Whereas, like, supply chain stuff, I feel like what they did with that, where they were just like, let's just let them, it'll go away. And it kind of did. Like, you don't really hear that many people on the left talking about supply chain stuff. So I feel like they're kind of good at being like, just let them fight. Everything will be fine. We're going to sit here at peace. And then sometimes they do find the right moments to, like, really react and know that they should have done better. So I think, like, I've been impressed with their ability to, like, react appropriately, whether that's, like, not feeding the fire in the punditry, and whether it's admitting that they were, I mean, nobody's like, we were wrong, or just like, you admit when you're wrong, when you do what we asked you to do that you should have done previously.
So I like that about them, but that is really only effective if you are also taking that ability to sort of ignore the, like, those types of problems. You're not really taking advantage of your ability to do that if you're not then replacing it
with
what
true.
We are doing. And that's really where I feel like they've lacked. And I think I hate to bring this up, but I'm going to because I saw a very just infuriating headline on AP News the other day about it. Kamala, completely, is she like not even part of the strategy? Is she not being considered whatsoever? I saw a headline on AP
News
that was like—
Apparently not if they want to put her on the court.
I mean, that's a rumor. I saw this like headline on AP News. It's like a year in, like Kamala Harris is lost. That is above the fold on AP News. I'm like, how is that news? Like nothing is in this
story. We can talk about that too.
Nothing happened. Yeah. So why is that a top of the headline story? Yes, it is to be analyzed, but the administration just doesn't. Yeah. Go ahead.
One of the biggest disappointments for me has been I would say that the admin, I kind of expected more competence, and it's a little bit depressing to me that like Joe Biden's been doing this for a really long time. This was his third time true running for president. Like the man has obviously wanted power for a really long time. He asked for it in the middle of one of the greatest set of intersecting crises in American history. And people were like, okay, dude, let's see what you got. And he was like, I have a lot of calm. That's what I'm going to do.
I'm just not going to do.
But then on the other hand, you're like, but everything's on fire. You know, like, don't get me wrong. Caretaker presidents are super important. They really do keep the bridge between, like, when things are actually functioning properly, sometimes you don't need anybody to rock the boat. Sometimes you just need people who are going to shore things up, keep things moving, going in the right direction. Things are in a very bad direction, though. We are handbasket hell situation right now. It is not good. We need someone to proactively pull us back up. We do not need, okay, well, at least the ride, you will not get motion sickness. Like, sir, to hell? Please, the motion sickness is not my greatest concern right now. So there is a little bit of disappointment in how the admin, as you said, Amanda, is very reactive in the sense that they do see problems and they go towards them and they analyze what's going on and they see whether or not it really requires full court press. And they've done a little bit of what the Obama admin did, which was, you know, not try to get caught up in the 24-hour news cycle. On the other hand, man, these headlines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the way he treated Kamala when he was recruiting her as VP, I saw that and I was like, he's not going to treat her properly. He's not treating her properly now. This is like letting her get savaged by his own team, letting her like twist in the wind, there's a lot of stuff going on there. And I was like, this is not somebody who fundamentally respects you. Like, if Obama had let this happen to him, he would never have joined on board. If he had let his recruiting team talk about how shitty Joe Biden is, are you serious? Publicly? And how they didn't want to choose him? And then they were like, oh, I guess we have to?
Yeah, that's fucked up.
Are you serious? And not giving her a portfolio or understanding what her strengths are and letting her lean into those. Although admittedly, she doesn't have great executive strengths, so that's a weakness already. But like, she feels comfortable, obviously, talking to Black people as a Black and Indian woman. So maybe, I don't know, you could have had her be the key bridge on this voting rights legislation. Key campaign on it, even.
But if you have someone like Biden, very empathetic, very good, I think, guy that I think what people respond to is that sort of trustworthiness that you can feel. When you have someone like that, then you need a ruthless Dick Cheney getting your agenda done. And Kamala, I do think, has that in her a little bit, but it needed to be tapped into and unleashed, if you will, for her to sort of get her way. And then I think she herself appears to me to be worried about what people think in a way that, you know, that's just sort of the downside if you're not a narcissistic sociopath. You know, you have to worry. You just can't help but worry about what people think. So, you know, I do think there could have been, look, hindsight's 2020 and everyone's doing their best. But that would have been an ideal situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it does feel like something that's hard to fix at this point. Like, it's not unfixable. Obviously, there are years left.
We all dread the what should we have for dinner question. I know I do. I love a home-cooked meal, but I don't always have the time, energy, or groceries to make it happen. Being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, so I can spend less time trying to be top chef and more time watching it. Whether you prefer classic meal kits with pre-portioned ingredients and easy instructions, speedy recipes ready in less than 30 minutes, oven-ready kits with pre-chopped ingredients, or quick microwave meals that assemble in minutes, Home Chef has you covered for delicious meals without the hassle. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you never have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering our listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your first box. Go to homechef.com/feverdream. That's homechef.com/feverdream for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard that right. Homechef.com/feverdream. Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert.
I mean, one thing I wanted to talk about is like the news coverage. I mean, Sammy and I read this a lot. I mean, the news like consumption among just the average person is down like crazy since the past year. Specifically, like more partisan outlets have seen news go down. But has your I don't know if this isn't a useful question for us because our news consumption habits are a little different because all three of us consume and process news for a living. But has your news consumption changed or your relationship to news consumption changed in the past year?
Yes, I don't
really.
Yeah, totally. I am able to compartmentalize when I consume the news and I don't feel like I'm frantically consuming the same way where I'm like, I can't get off Twitter because like something might come up. And that is because the news doesn't happen like it used to. It used to be you were on the edge of your seat to see what would happen. Now I'm like taking it in. I have time to process it and I am able to compartmentalize that with like leisure, and I'm purposely doing that, and I'm purposely trying to create that boundary because I know that this might not be forever, probably won't be forever, mm-hmm. and there will likely be a time when I go back to being on the edge of my seat, all over it all the time. So,
no, I haven't changed my news consumption. I
still reading Civil War tomes
for pleasure.
What happened was I basically. Even before the Trump admin happened, except for campaigns where I follow a little bit more closely on the day-to-day, just because it's interesting about what peeks through the maelstrom for mm-hmm. regular people in figuring out, like, is this complete trash or is this something that's going to stick? And other than that, I generally don't follow day-to-day very closely on national. I basically stopped watching any kind of national news. I don't do it. I only listen to local now. I'm very lucky. I have New York One. Mm-hmm. They keep me good. That's how I do. But yeah, basically I just stopped paying attention to like broader news unless it's from my very curated space on Twitter where I only click on things that are not clickbaity. You know, I'll right. check to see whether or not other people have looked at it and been like, okay, so is this a piece of information that's actually relevant? And then otherwise, I'm always, that's reading. It's reading essays and so I haven't engaged with news like a normal human being for like 7 years now.
Your whole life. I don't think you've ever engaged with news like a normal human being, to be honest. No, but what you are saying is interesting about like to watch what penetrates, because even though I am totally. Compartmentalizing, I'm still reading every day. Like I'm reading pretty much all the news websites, not every article, obviously, but I'm like seeing what headlines are there. And it is fascinating to see what is going on that like no one else is at all aware about. Mm-hmm. And just because it doesn't really make it past Twitter. And, you know, it may not even make it into like the sub newsletter, you know, so it's just it really is an interesting time because the news is not sensationalist whatsoever right now.
Yeah.
And finally, a last question. Is there anything you thought would have changed a year into a new president that hasn't, whether it's a specific policy or like just a vibe?
That we would be ending a pandemic. I thought we would be like, okay, so here's where we go next. We are not. That is very depressing to me. I am disappointed that the Biden administration's like, it's a year out and we're going to send you tests now. Like,
yeah. I was going to say that should have happened day one. There should have been a marshaling, World War II effort to get these things out. And I'm glad, like I said, like, I'm glad that they did, but, and that this infrastructure exists, but should have happened day one.
Right. I thought the pandemic was actually, I thought it would be over. I thought that would be done, but in terms of where we are with everything else, voting rights, the Build Back Better, climate stuff, everything.
Trump is still a person that is allowed to speak in public.
So I kind of envisioned it going like one of two ways. My optimistic self is like, we're going to recover. Like, Biden's going to push through voting rights and maybe we'll get police reform. And I thought, oh, for maybe 6 hours when we control the Senate and then the Republicans briefly denounced the coup, I thought, oh, my gosh, like maybe things will improve. Maybe they're not going to improve like as much as like the ideal. But I thought like he will step it up
come
and
to
like
a collective
we'll
agreement
past yeah. it. We will be past it. But then there was a part of me that was like, you can't put the toothpaste back in or whatever, some shit. And these people are batshit. Yeah. And Trump, even though he's off Twitter, the news is too siloed. And something else that's interesting is the Republicans don't even want to be in the presidential debates which will mean there will be no moment when the two candidates meet and can be compared by the average person. So there was always this part of me that was like, you know what? We're going to get like 4 years of a break. Biden's going to be like mediocre. He's not going to be able to get the things that need to be done. And then we're going to get a real fascist and it's going to really be like the rest of our lives. So I'm worried.
That's what you thought would happen or that's what you think is happening? I feel like we're leaning that.
I was like, in my head, I was like, it will go one of two ways and I'm not sure which way. Obviously, I'd prefer the former way. It's sort of like how I'm not sure if crypto is a total scam or our whole future. It could go one of two ways. I kind of feel like it's our whole future, the same way I kind of feel like we're doing the fascism. And I actually think crypto might be one of the ways that like we're able to sort of weather some of the challenges.
I can't take that in right
American
now.
Dollar,
Jesus Christ.
Who knows what might happen to it.
I don't know if I can agree.
I'm sorry.
With that.
I'm going to send you a Timothy Snyder article.
Okay.
Perfect.
I was gonna say that the crypto and between like the crypto promotion and the sports betting commercials, I feel like we're in very dystopian like advertising times. Like every other commercial is like, hey, you wanna bet your money? Like what money? I am a poor. Like what is happening?
Caitlin, you know what they did? You know what they did is that the way people made money in finance is basically just like clicking shit and like putting an algorithm and like you somehow end up with so much money and like you whatever with the taxes. And it's like, it doesn't make any sense. It's generating non-existent money. They have basically now marketed that to regular people so that they can find ways to
because
do that in their
scheme.
Lives.
That is actually actual definition
of a pyramid scheme.
If you can't serve, if your product needs new people in order to remain profitable, you're in a problem.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, if the key is that new people have to buy in or else it can't sustain itself, you might not be in a good place.
That is an excellent topic for another show. Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Sammy Sage.
I'm Caitlin Bird.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast. Bye.
The Betches Up Podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Jorge Morales-Pico, and Sean Kilby. Editing by Jorge Morales-Pico. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Be sure to follow @Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails to suppod@betches.com.
Betches.